Welcome to the Creative Empire Podcast. Each week, Raina Pomeroy, the life and biz success coach, and Christina Scalera, the attorney for creatives, are taking you up close and personal with successful influencers in the creative community and tackling your biggest business hurdles. Their mission is to help you, creative entrepreneurs, think beyond your daily biz so you can make the brave decisions that build your creative empire.
Hello, welcome back for another episode of the Creative Empire Podcast. It's Christina and I'm here with Raina and Shanna Skidmore today. Shanna Skidmore has been nicknamed the Dream Releaser by her clients. She is a business and financial strategist working with creatives to help them build not just a business, but a profitable business. That's something she's super passionate about. And I'm really excited. Hi, Shanna. It's great to have you on this show today.
Hi.
I'm super excited.
Me too.
Awesome. So
yeah, I'm excited.
I should also mention, guys, you may not have seen as much of Shanna lately because as we're recording this, she's been off of social media entirely for the last, what, like 3.5 months now, or almost four months, probably.
3.5 months, almost four.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So that has been an interesting experience. Do you want to tell us a little bit? I know that you're going to be doing a lot of presentations and things like that, but, you know, like what caused you to jump off social media and has it been a good thing?
Yeah. So much to talk about, Christina. Oh, I got off social media officially March 1st of 2017. And I'd actually been thinking about it for, gosh, 8 months or more. Probably like many people listening, my husband multiple times in life when I was trying to edit the perfect image, and I'm not a photographer, or figure out why the engagement wasn't what I expected on a post. You know, he's like, Shanna, why do you need that? And I would be like, you know, I'm building a business. I have to have it, you know, and for months. And I feel like I'm a person that created really good boundaries with social media, and I teach those boundaries to my clients, but I still saw it affecting my life and my emotional well-being. And I saw that for a lot of my clients as well. And, you know, I have the luxury where I don't sell something all the time. I have the blueprint model, which I do once a year, and other programs. But I thought, you know, I need to figure out another way and I want to pioneer another way. And Christina, you actually said it so well when we were speaking at TrueBuy in Michigan. You said something, and I've just stuck on it, how you said, I kind of skirt around controversial issues. And I loved how you said that because I've never set out to be that way. But I do think this is a conversation that needs to be had. And if I can pioneer, kind of be the guinea pig of being the first person to run through the wall, always gets bloody, right? So figure out a different way and what it really does, good and bad. And so to answer your question, how has it been emotionally and for my family and my lifestyle? It's been amazing. I definitely can see how it would affect and is affecting my business. It's just quiet, but I'm excited to figure out how to do it differently. So it's been a good challenge, and I'm lucky that I'm in a position where I can do that and then help other people that may choose to. Again, I would say, like, I don't hate social media. There's so many things I miss about it, but I don't miss the emotional side effects of it.
I can definitely relate.
So
what, I mean, other than this whole social media fast right now, I mean, I know you take a lot of sabbatical, well, not a lot, but you have at least planned sabbaticals, which is a really interesting, unique concept. Also something that probably triggers a lot of people. But, you know, what has led to that? Like, how did you get to that place? And, you know, was it the clients that you were working with? Is it the work that you were doing? If you want to touch on some of that.
Yeah. So it's funny. So right now it's, you know, mid-June when everybody's listening. It'll be August, right? So every summer I take July fully off completely. I put up an away message and I say, I'll see you August 1st. And I've done that now. This will be my fourth year. So it's funny. Now it's become a thing. You know, I have a ton of clients that take July particularly as sabbatical because it tends to be, especially in the wedding industry and creative world, a slower season. So I have a lot of people that take July sabbatical. And I think this is a conversation that started to come about. But for me, it came from desperation. My very first year in business, I had officially, you know, launched Shanna Skidmore Consulting. I didn't know exactly what I was doing. I saw a need in the market. I saw how my particular skill sets in finance and psychology and just kind of, I always say kind of bridging the gap between the creative entrepreneur and the financial CPA. I kind of stand in the middle of that communication barrier. So I saw this happening and I had been doing it, you know, unofficially, I guess, for about a year to 2.5 years with creative entrepreneurs. But when I officially launched my company, I was doing one-on-one work. And so that's for 6 months, I would sit with a client, basically went through everything with them. We developed their business from the ground up. You know, I was doing stuff I really didn't even need to be doing, like licensing and contracts. And that is, I am not an attorney and that's not my skill set. But with a financial background and you have, I would say, enough to be dangerous, right? So I was doing a lot of things. And just like many people, we start into business and we say yes to a lot of things and we have no idea really how to price it exactly or how much time those things are going to take on. And so projects that I estimated taking 3 months were taking 6 months and I was exhausted. I was staying up through the night, like pulling all-nighters, like college, at least once a week. And I had gained 15 pounds. My diet usually consists about 3 a.m. of saltine crackers and Diet Coke. It was terrible. So I was like, this is insane. So I had got to a place where I knew I was finishing up some big projects. And I was like, I'm taking a month off. I've got to figure this out. And so July became my sabbatical month. And I did. I took it off. I didn't do social media that month. I put my way message up. I told all my new clients I would be back in August, and it saved my life. I mean, definitely saved my marriage and saved my business. And I figured out that, you know, people ask me a lot, well, what do you do on sabbatical? Do you just, I don't know, sit around by the pool and hang out? And yes, I do sit by the pool a lot. That's what I'll be doing today. But I also think a lot on improving things. I ask myself, how could I do this better? What's working? What's not working? It's a time to work on my business, not be in my business. So it just stuck. And then, so July every year, and I really encourage people, I think everyone listening can sit down and think through, like, when is a time that just doesn't make sense for you to be in your business? Inquiries are slower. Projects are slower. I think if you desire to take some time out, which I think we all should, I mean, even what Bill Gates, I think, was said to have a think week every year, we all need a think week. So mine's a month long. And then I also take Thanksgiving through the New Year off as well. So yeah, I love sabbatical. I'm a big proponent.
I love that. And I think a lot of people might be freaked out, especially when they're doing client work, like one-on-one, either consulting or graphic design or something like that, where it might be a little bit more ongoing, to say, no, I'm actually taking a whole month off. How did you kind of either get over the mindset, or maybe you were just okay with it? Or how did you kind of talk yourself through that when you made that decision the first time?
I guess, again, like I said, I was in desperate mode. I was exhausted. I knew I wasn't doing my best work. And I think that something I teach in the Blueprint Model, I'll talk about a lot, is I think most of our communication, or the fears that we have with our clients, are just us not communicating with them. And so I found that the minute that I said to my client, I'll be back August 1st, as long as projects are wrapped up and you plan that well, and it's all about setting an expectation. Honestly, now it's funny, I get emails at least once a week from people that are like, I follow you now because you went off social media, or I do this because you take July off, or, you know, I got to this place where when I was doing one-on-one phone calls, I didn't like them to be scheduled 3 months in advance, because I was like, what? I don't know what I'm doing that day. And I don't like to schedule things in advance. So I started opening the doors to my one-on-one calls on the first of every month. And when it was funny, when you tell people that you're unavailable, they want you more. And so I just started figuring out how to set expectations, to explain openly what I'm doing, and people really understand. I think the hardest thing with taking time off is the fear of what you're missing out on. Oh, I'm going to miss this, or I'm going to miss that. But, you know, honestly, every time I tell people, I've turned down speaking events, I've turned down clients, I've turned down a ton of money. I just think it comes back tenfold. When you give yourself space to do your job better, then you get better. My best ideas come when I'm on sabbatical. So.
What about pricing? Because I know you have a course, Pricing for Creatives, that sold through If I Made. One of the things that I see all the time are people complaining that they can't do that because let's just say they're a wedding planner and they get paid, you know, June 1st, they get paid whatever, $2,500. August 1st, they get another $2,500. And then in December, they get like the last $2,500 or something. So, you know, what do you have to say to people that are like, I just can't do it? I mean, it's like feast and famine all the time. I'm going from $2,500 to nothing to $2,500 to nothing. You know, what are some things that they could maybe actively seek to change in their business that would allow them to take some time off, even if it's just a week or two and not a whole month or season or, you know, whatever it might be?
Yeah, for sure. So I have what I call every month I sit down. The first Thursday is when I do it, but I encourage people to pick one day a month. I call it my money date. I've heard, I think my friend Kat calls it your duty day or something, but I sit down once a month, and I'm a big believer in sitting down and planning out your finances. So I sit down every month. I still hand write out my budget every single month. I have online tools, but I still write it out. I write down what income is coming in that month. What do I expect to be going out that month? And is it enough? Do I need to take on another, you know, when I was doing one-on-one work, do I need to take on a couple more calls? Do I need to take on a day session, which is basically a one-day workshop I used to do with clients? I plan it. I think the biggest thing is just awareness is the key. Being aware that really I can sit down and plan how my money's coming in and out. And Christine, I loved what you actually said this the other day. Like, why do more wedding people not take payments monthly? That was a great question. I think that we naturally, the most people that I work with wouldn't necessarily classify themselves as money people. I'm going to air quote that, money people, for those listening, air quoting, which I think is an interesting, I think really a negative thing that we say about ourselves. We all can understand our money if we're shown what we need to look at. But I think if we're not money people and we take these big lump sums, then you have to manage that money. It would be so much easier, I think. Why don't you take monthly payments and know that that cash flow is coming in every month? I thought that was a genius idea, Christina. I'm giving you all the credit for that. But I think just being aware of what's coming in and out. And then the second point to that is understanding that our clients care about the outcome, not about how we get there. I mean, we need a great client experience, so it's not about that. But they don't need to know if we're working, you know, if we're getting paid. They don't care if we're working on their project every single week or if we're doing it in chunks. Again, it's all about how you set up the client expectation, and they just care about the outcome and communicating that. I learned this the best from my very first client, Tasty Trinay, who is Firefly Events, a planner out of New York. She was my first official client. I remember the day I got the check from her. I was like, Kyle, we're rich. We're doing this. But I would be like frantically working on her project, right? I was so behind, had so much to do. We've all been there. And so she would not hear from me for like a couple weeks at a time because I didn't have what I wanted to get to her done. And so one time she emailed me, you all know these emails, we've all gotten them. And it was like, hey, I just checking in, wondering how things are going. I haven't heard from you in a while. It's like the dreaded client email, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, she hates me. She's going to quit. And we had a hard but really amazing conversation. She's one of my best friends now. I mean, that's been 4 years ago. She taught me that really we just need to be proactive and saying, hey, this is what I'm working on right now. You can expect it at this time. They don't care, you know, if you're working on it every single day. So I think just learning about client communication again, and then planning out those finances. And that's really helped me. I don't skip a beat anymore taking 2 months off. Last year, we took 3 months off. We took June through, we left for a road trip in July, and we took July through October basically off. I worked one day a week. And it's amazing. It's so much about planning.
You probably got just as much done, by the way. Yeah. I mean, just having that hyper efficiency, right? When you're like, oh, I get 8 hours a day to work on my business and that's it. That's all I get. It is kind of crazy. I don't know if it was you or somebody else who did the time tracking. Was that you, Shanna? Mm-hmm. Where basically you're looking at like, how productive are you? And oftentimes it's like only 1 to 2 hours a day of productivity. So it makes sense that you would still be able to take 3 months off and work on your business kind of in hyperdrive on 1 day a week. What do you think is the most helpful part about owning your own business? You know, is it being able to price the way that you want? Is it being able to take this time off? What is really the benefit? And then like, what's the, because that's kind of, that turns into the grass is always greener sometimes. So like, what's the flip side of that? You know, should everybody be an entrepreneur?
Mm-hmm. That's such a good question. So should everyone be an entrepreneur? Risk is the word that comes to mind. Entrepreneurship is risky. And why I have a job really is because we aren't often shown, as an entrepreneur, you have to be great at managing your time and managing your finances. And those are things that can 100% be taught. I just don't see them being taught very much. It's starting to happen. I think the conversation, just like your podcast, I mean, great, great content for people wanting to be entrepreneurs or starting an entrepreneurship or people in it, you know, in the throes of it. So, but I think the conversation's starting, but it didn't used to be that way. We didn't used to get taught how to manage our time. And then I think as an artist or creatives that want to go create, oftentimes we start a business out of passion, out of something we're excited about. Or, you know, I hear it all the time. I did flowers for my wedding and I was really good at it. Or I did my own invitations and I really loved it. And so people do it for the art, not for being an entrepreneur. I wish I knew the statistic, but I talk to a lot of people. And out of 100 people I talk to, 5 of them don't really care about what they do. They just want to be an entrepreneur. The other 95 care about what they do, and they just happen to be an entrepreneur. So I think that first, just understanding that, you know, it's a lot of risk and you have to learn the business side where you'll never be able to, or also just to find that you're okay with it being a hobby. And I think that that's 100% okay. I think that sometimes people just don't allow themselves to just do it for fun. And there's something really beautiful about that. So really asking yourself, do you want to do this for fun or do you want to do it for fun and make money doing it? But I love entrepreneurship. It is my favorite thing. I think that's why people call me the dream releaser. Anytime that I have friends, I have a friend right now that's great at, he works in construction and I just want him to start his own company and start remodeling homes, right? So people tell me these ideas they have. I have another friend that wanted to start a catering business and she's a CPA. And they tell me these ideas. I'm like, okay, here's how we do it. Here's step, and let's make it happen, you know? And I love putting a strategy and a plan in place to make those dreams happen, because entrepreneurship for me is amazing. I get to take time off that I wouldn't get to. I get to sit by the pool and do work. I get to make friends with people, you know, like you two ladies, and just talk about like real issues. And this is my job. You know, it's kind of funny. Like, it's the best career in the whole world. But if you don't learn to manage time and manage money, it can be the worst. It ruins marriages. It ruins relationships. It ruins finances. People get in so much trouble. And that's my big mission. I mean, not that I have all the answers by any means, but I do think I can help people create, you know, get back to those basics and figure out, like, you want to do this for fun? You want to make some money and have some time? Like, let's just go there. So I'm very passionate, as you can tell, about entrepreneurship. But again, I don't think you have to be an entrepreneur. You know, you can do it for fun if you want. And that's okay too. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think the problem becomes when you're sort of half in and half out. And I see people investing a lot in order to like be a real entrepreneur, but they're not true. Like, what is the difference, I guess, between a hobbyist and a professional in their business?
Well, I get in trouble saying this, so I want to be very aware of the audience and really encouraging to say, like, people get, I think, very, it can sound demeaning to say hobbyist or if you have a hobby, and I don't think that at all. And that's why I want to put joy and beauty back into the word hobby, because I think it's gotten a bad rap. You know, I have a finance background, so there's a technical definition to the IRS of a hobby. And that's, you know, you have to make profit for it to be a business. You have to make profit within your first 3 years. And that means sales minus costs, there's money left over, money to pay yourself. I don't know all the numbers or the IRS code and all that, but to tell you the exact definition, but it is profit. And so to come back to what is a business versus what a hobby is money. It's the technical definition. And if you continue to write off a business to the IRS and you never make money, at some point they're going to ask you questions and they're going to wonder if this is, you know, classified as a hobby. So that's the, you know, financial behind hobbyist versus entrepreneur. But I think, you know, there are a lot of people out there wanting to grow and build a business while they're still working 9 to 5, right? And I just think that having a plan in place, understanding that your business isn't there, just, it can just be for fun. And that is a hobby and let it be that. But if you want to make business, make money, turn into business, it needs to be priced appropriately. You have systems in place. You need to have a plan to grow it. And I think it's just about your attitude. Is this a short-term thing or a long-term thing? Has a big effect on what you're growing. I love when people pursue ideas, but I just want to give power back to, like, not every idea has to be a business idea. Is that okay to say? I believe that. I think that's true.
How would it feel if someone laid out a business plan, a roadmap, or some kind of strategy that would get you started and get you closer to the goals that you dream of accomplishing in your business? Well, Raina and I actually have done this. So all you have to do to get this totally free resource is head to creativeempire.co, that's creativeempire.co, and click on free workbook. We will deliver to you 50 of our most potent, powerful strategies and proven tactics to getting our businesses visible, booked, and profitable. So if you would like to have this in your business for totally free, you can grab that at creativeempire.co. We'll see you there.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer.
I don't know who said it, but it's like, kill your darlings. It's someone really famous. You probably know Raina. You know everybody.
What? I've never heard of that. Tell me more. What does that mean?
Oh, gosh. I'm not going to do justice to someone who said this originally, and I'm sure someone in our audience is going to be like, it was this person. Duh, you're so dumb. Which is fine. Then we'll know who it is. But there's someone pretty famous in the creative world who talks about how you need to kill your darlings, right? Like, you need to, even though you're good at calligraphy and wedding planning and florals and, you know, like, everybody notices how talented you are at all of these things, at some point, you know, if the wedding planning is the only portion of the business bringing in money, you have to kill all the other darlings. Yes. You have to get rid of the calligraphy. You have to get rid of the floral design. And sure, you can still do those as a hobby, like we're talking about here. Maybe they become a business one day, but in the meantime, like, dead. You have to get rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to interject. On that, something that I really encourage clients to do. I see this all the time. Like, we're just, my friend Megan of May Mayco says, like, throwing spaghetti on the wall, right? Throw spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. So sometimes we have to start that way. I did that. I helped people with bookkeeping. I would sort through receipts on April 14th, helping people file their taxes. I mean, I tried everything. And at some point I would get paid, you know, I'd be like, I don't know, pay me. They would pay me in cookies or Starbucks drinks, you know? And so sometimes you have to try those things and figure out what sticks, right? And so I always say, give yourself a year, throw the spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. But ultimately, you should get down to where you're providing 3 or less services to your clients. We have to have direction. It's because, back to marketing, you know, talking to that one person. If you're trying to do calligraphy and flowers and planning and photography and design wedding dresses, it's just very hard to build one business. That's 5 different pricing structures. That's 5 different production processes. That's 5 different ideal clients. So therefore, that should be 5 different websites and 5 different businesses. You know, it's very complicated. Now, you know, I have a friend, Amy Osaba, who started in floral, right? So Amy's done floral for 10 years, and now she's offering design work and some more planning types things. It's okay to add later, but if we can't define up front, if we do so many things, then our audience doesn't know how to purchase from us. They don't know how to hire us. And so, though, I say, just because you can does not mean you should. And so we have so many talents. You know, I am a pianist. I played piano for 15 years. Like, I'm probably not going to go write piano music, even though I could, you know? And so I think it's, I love how you said that, Christina, killing your dart. Like, find what you want to be your business and then find what you just want to do just because you love it. I think there's so much beauty in doing stuff, not getting paid for it. There's really great gifts there. So anyways, side note.
I just wanted to ask a question because I see a lot of people who, and I talk about this all the time, but people who are just starting in their businesses who see success stories like yours, see success stories like people who have courses and things that are more passive and want to do that game instead of the one-on-one game or whatever the non-darlings idea is. And my take is that I think you do have to start with some of that work and learning your market and all of that stuff. And I think it gives you a lot of paid research for the content that you might create in the future. That's my take. And I'd love to hear like what you think is either possible or what you should be doing and just get your take on that.
Yeah. I call this the 10-year overnight success. I heard the guy that started GoPro actually said that. He's one of my favorite people, Nick. I don't remember his last name. Anyways, I think that's it. He talked about that with GoPro. I think this, you know, I think of my friend Aaron Benzekin of Floret Flowers. I think of Amy. I think of myself at Magnolia, Fixer Upper, Magnolia, 10-year overnight success. People see it as if it looks overnight. But most of the time, the people you're seeing have been doing this for decades. You know, I have a finance psychology degree. I started in 2003. I have 14 years of experience. I started in financial planning in 2007. I've worked with entrepreneurs. So at this point, that's 10 years. And so, yeah, I officially started my company in 2013, but I worked with Amy for a year and a half before that. So since 2011, and then 2010, I started working with a fashion designer. So, you know, there's a background story. And I think I actually just did a webinar with my blueprint model crew on passive income. And I think that passive income and multiple streams of income are often confused. I think that's really important to have multiple streams of income. That's where I talk about three services. I like to do this in tiers where one's price kind of low, it's more accessible. So this would be like my hourly calls. And then I would have like my day sessions, which were the mid-range offering. And then I would have a high-end, which was when I did one-on-one consulting full-time. So I have some multiple streams of income. It comes in different ways. I think that's really great. Versus passive income, which is producing something where it's producing, you no longer work inside of it. I think people want that. And that's kind of this like, oh, the ultimate dream where I can, again, sit by the pool, sip pina coladas and not do anything. I only have one source right now of passive income. You know, the blueprint model is a coaching program, but I am with those people all the time. It's a course, it's online, but I would not consider that passive. Pricing for creatives is housed under If I Made. I don't do anything with that. Once a year we revise it, but they do all the admin work. They do all that. That is true passive income. And that came when I, you know, was basically 12 years into doing financial planning. So I think that all these things are good and good things to think of. I say build your track record first. You have to have results. You have to have a great client experience. And I read this article on, I think it was on entrepreneurs.com or something like that the other day. And it said, never diversify your streams of income until your main source is on lockdown. So until you have it where it's running, you know the pricing, you know the marketing, you know the systems. When that's done well, then diversify. But right now I see a lot of people trying maybe a little too early, and some might have success in that, and then others, it might just really hurt your main source of income. So I think it's really exciting to think of and plan for that, but I just want to caution people, like, give it time. Allow it to have time, build your business up, and there's a lot of backstory behind companies, you know, just thinking that 10-year overnight success, don't compare your beginning to someone else's middle, right? So
when someone is looking at, you know, maybe some of these cases of like 10 years to overnight, Chris Gillibo, he's an author. He has a really funny graphic that went viral, and it was like, 872 days to overnight success or something like that. You know, when someone's looking at that and they're, you know, maybe seeing you up on stage at all these really cool, shiny conferences and workshops, you know, they want to do stuff like that too. When is it too early for them to try? And when is it, or is it, there may not be a too early, but like, when is it too early, if there is one, for them to try to do that and make themselves, I guess, more exposed to the general creative community? And when is it maybe just like a really strategic move on their part? So I guess I'm asking because a lot of people ask me, you know, like, how did you get into public speaking? How did you get into like doing this workshop or this conference? And for me, it just kind of happened really organically, but you do a lot of public speaking. You're on stage a lot. That's kind of, it sounds like a revenue stream these days. So how did you start to treat that as one of these diversified streams of income? And, you know, was there ever a point where it was like too early where you weren't expert enough, or does that not exist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's such a great question. You guys are so good at this. I'm glad you have a podcast. I think that I resonate very much with what you said. It organically happened for me as well. And for the people that I feel like I see kind of going up the ladder, whatever you want to say, it's oftentimes very organic. I was asked to speak at the very first workshop I ever spoke at was Joy Thapin's workshop in Atlanta. And she asked me because she knew that I was talking about money in a creative environment and she didn't know anybody else doing that, right? And so I think it's never too early. I think we all have something unique and special to share. However, you know, I think there's also those moments where it's like, if I had been asked to do that 3 years ago, I would have flopped on my face. But, you know, we all have to flop sometimes. I flopped. And so I always say, if you're curious about something, I love Elizabeth Gilbert, Follow Your Curiosity. I resonate with that a lot. So not until this year though. So, you know, I guess I've been in business officially 3.5 years, unofficially 5. Not until this year did I start targeting places that I wanted to speak. So in 2018, I am only speaking at ones that I have actually targeted. Every other workshop I've ever spoken at, I have been asked to speak at. And then after my first year, probably even first year and a half, did I start actually considering my yeses and my noes a little more. So I wanted to really think through, is this the right audience fit for me? You know, I said before, we kind of have to have like a low point, midpoint, a high point for our services, right? So now that I'm not doing one-on-one, I needed something that was more on the exposure level that would get me more in front of my audience. And so speaking was a strategic step for me as a marketing plan to get in front of my audience, because you all are my audience. But if somebody listening, know who your audience is and why you want to be in front of them, or just why it's on your bucket list. I just reached out to my college where I went to college. And I was like, this is my 10-year reunion. And so I said, I would love to speak at this. You know, I speak all over the country and that has nothing to do with my audience. That for me was just like something almost like on a little bucket list to speak at your college. So know if it's something that you're doing strategically to grow your company. And if so, what audience do you want to be in front of? I am a big fan of target lists. I've never really done that. But now that I'm off social media, I've got to be better at like figuring out marketing, right? So targeting my speaking and then also targeting which blogs do I want to contribute to? What magazines do I want to be in and really doing that? So I think just like, again, number one, following your curiosity. If it's something you're interested in and it makes sense in your business, it doesn't take away from what you're doing. I tried flowers. I've tried this. I've tried that. And I think that contributes to our overall person. But I think in regards to speaking and those type of things, ask yourself why you want to be in those audiences and make sure that you're not doing it just for like, do I find significance here? Or do I feel like this would make me important? Because there's so many, you're just significant in your own way. And so just really asking, is that my audience? And is that who I want to be in front of? And I think it does happen organically. And then at the same time, I think we have to go out and ask for what we want. Erin Benzikin, a floor at Flower, she said, when she started trying to grow her business, she wanted to target 10 magazines. And She targeted 10. She ended up getting 12 features in those 10. And that's what really launched her in the beginning, before the world of social media even like happened. You know, people look at her now and they see she has, what, 350,000 Instagram followers. And they're like, this is, but it didn't start that way. It started because she targeted publications. And so just really thinking strategically about getting in front of your audience and what that looks like.
Yeah. So Shanna, when people are starting out, they're maybe looking at something like pricing for creatives. They're taking into account what you're talking about, you know, just get started, kill your darlings, all the stuff that we've kind of talked about today. You know, if there was like one actionable thing that they could take away and maybe even learn about when they're considering maybe even like the blueprint model, right? Like, what do you feel like is that one thing that they could walk away with and feel really confident in their work or in their ability to do a good job for clients or customers today?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a couple different points on that. So tell me if I don't answer your question. But first, my first thought on that was, I think the very first thing that anyone can do that is listening, and this happens when we do financial plans or business plans, but I think the very first thing is defining what you really want out of this and what is important to you. You know, I think people are talking about a lot more these days, defining success, blah, blah, blah. But I think this is, I don't want it to become a cliche because I think it's very important to say, what do you want out of your business? What would give you excitement? And I was actually listening to one of your other podcasts with Mary Beth, and she said it so well. And what we talked about in financial planning, looking back 3 years from now, what would success look like for you? What is it that you would accomplish? And we talk about this in finance and other ways, but I think this is where it has to start. Really what you want. Does that look like a great client experience? Does that look like 3 clients a year? Does that look like 60,000 of income? Really defining it. And that's going to help you make decisions on education and outcomes. Because I think right now we're going to start seeing even more decisions. You know, started, there was a lot of workshops. We went through like the workshop phase. I think now we're going through the online course phase, and all there's really great content out there, but it just means we have to decipher more what's right for us. And I think that starts with understanding what is the outcome you want to get out of it. You are always going to be disappointed in your purchases if you don't know what you want to get out of it. You might get something completely different out of it than you thought, and that's okay. But if you want to increase your technical skills as a florist or a planner, you're not going to love the blueprint model. It has nothing to do with that, you know? Or if you really need to improve your legal stuff, then you want to talk to Christina. There's some understanding what the outcome is you're looking for will really help in your decision making. And then I also think everyone should give themselves an education budget in their annual financial plan for their business. Understanding what I see a lot, talking, going back to money and just in human nature, personal finance, business finance, when we have more in our bank account, what happens? We spend more. And so right now during wedding season and people have a lot more money, maybe in their bank accounts, there's a lot more spending going on. But then we forget to think about December and January. It's cold and we have no inquiries and nothing's going on. And everybody then gets really stressed about money, right? So I think just really making a plan ahead of time and not just spending in a reactionary way, like this looks great or they're selling this, or, and also not getting stressed out by the scarcity. I think in the marketing of it, there's, I always say decisions that I make in a rush are never good decisions. And I am very adamant about, I think about everything I do at least 24 hours. And so if someone is saying you have to decide right now, I know already that person is not going to be a good fit for me. And so, you know, the blueprint model comes around once a year. I understand that people really get stressed out about that. And I hope to let them know, like, hey, this needs to be a plan for next time. And the right educators and the right opportunities aren't trying to just trick you to buy in a certain window. So really giving yourself a budget, making a plan, and understanding the outcomes you're looking for will really, really help you decipher all of the, out of the really great content out there, what's the best content that you can get, and start there.
That's awesome. I think just what I'm hearing from all of what you're saying is like, be super intentional, plan ahead, look at the long game rather than the short game. And both in like your, you know, sabbatical decisions, as well as your course purchases, all of these things are kind of wrapped up into this kind of go slow. Like it's okay to not, I have this sign behind me right now that says work at your own pace. And I feel like in this culture of go, 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 hustle, 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 it's like you are saying slow it down and be okay with like looking at longer than maybe somebody else is looking. And I found that to be really refreshing. So thank you. Yeah.
Sometimes I get in my head, like I ask my husband sometimes, like, am I not ambitious enough? I'm like one of the most competitive people I've ever met. Kyle used to never play cards with me because I would get so mad. Oh, it's bad. I had to work on that. Volleyball, sports I used to play, like I cannot play them unless people are serious and we are playing the sport. So it's funny in business to find myself being the voice of slow down, because I never would have ever characterized myself that way. You know, I worked in finance for 5 years. That is a dog eat dog, very competitive industry. And maybe a little bit of that just made me realize, like, what are we truly going after? We're truly going after a life we love and a life enriching business. Yes, we want to do big things, but I think we're searching for happiness, right? And joy. And I just started realizing that there are ways we can do that that really have nothing to do with money. What are the studies after 75,000 of household income? There's no correlation with increased happiness. And so it's just funny, Raina, to hear you say that, because I've never felt that was who I am or my voice, but I definitely maybe see that more. Like, I don't want to be in a rush to make more money than somebody else, or I want to be in a hurry to love people well and pay my bills doing it, you know? And so I'm going to have to embrace that. It's like not who I thought in my head I am, but that's so true. I think that that's true.
I love that. And I think it's nice to hear that kind of perspective, because that's not a huge voice in our industry. So either way you look at it, whether you're competitive or the slowdown, I think there's seasons of it for all of us, and to kind of embrace that, especially, you know, as people are coming off of wedding season, or as, you know, whatever the season of your business looks like, yeah, or your family life, that's something that we can all embrace. So yeah, looking back on day one in your business, I know this is a really tough question, but I'd love for you to like look back and tell yourself something that you might not have known back when you were starting your creative empire.
Mm-hmm. I think that, well, darn it. Now it's going to go to the slowdown. Crap. I'm gonna have to embrace this about myself. I would have told myself to focus on the one person. I think that the minute you get too caught up in making it bigger and making it for more and making it, you know, now I have an online course called the Blueprint Model, and it's so that I could serve more people, right? But if I focus on serving more, then I lose the, it's great to think that way, but I would tell myself to keep just thinking about the one. And if I have one person in mind, my Maddies, my Katies, my ideal client, and just serve them, create products just for them, and it will by nature serve the masses. But I want to just keep focusing on the one. Anytime I lose sight of the one person, I find myself getting lost. I find myself feeling restless or scattered, or so that's what I would tell myself. Just keep focusing on the one and don't worry about how big or how small. Like, after it pays your bills, the rest is just gravy, and just keep serving that one person.
Where can everybody find the Blueprint Model? Where can they find you?
They can find me at shannaskimmore.com. That's about all right now. So shannaskimmore.com is a landing page, and it will put them on my newsletter where I send out awesome tips every week and just life updates. I talk about going social media free, send out webinars. And then this fall, I'll be coming back strong, maybe not on social media, but with more, I'll be blogging again and podcasting, and have some awesome stuff coming this fall. So we're rolling out a new website and a new platform, just continue the conversation. So right now, just shannaskimmore.com, and then get on the newsletter so you'll get updates when Blueprint Model is coming back, and if where I'm at the pool, or just things that are going on in the world of Shanna. So
thank you so much, Shanna. It's great to talk to you as always. And I hope you guys can all catch up with Shanna at shannaskidmore.com or at one of her speaking engagements. I can tell you from personal experience, it's truly a pleasure to watch her speak. It's like nothing else you've ever seen. Her speeches, I don't even want to call them speeches. They're not really speeches. They're more like presentations. They're so eye-opening. So I really hope you guys can seek her out, find her at these events, come find her, say hello. And thank you so much, Shanna. Thank you to all of you for listening. Go build your creative empire.
Are you ready to build your own empire? For more information, show notes, downloads, and tips on how to do it, head to www.creativeempire.co, where you can find out more about this week's episode and the two lovely ladies behind it all, encouraging you to build your own creative empire. If you enjoyed this week's show, it would mean so much to Raina and Christina if you could take 2 minutes to go to iTunes and leave a review. It's a little thing that makes a big difference for the show.